abrasive, etched with pride on her official CV. She's the woman who in 1970 began a campaign for her beloved Port Augusta. She ran what she called a one-woman war against Port Augusta City Council and the state government to stop the tons of pollution spewing across her city and causing all sorts of bronchial and asthmatic conditions. She won that war, of course. And since then, she's been the voice of Port Augusta and all the other towns and districts Australia has tried to push out of the way. John Howard recently passed through the area. Luckily for him, our guest was out of town. She knew exactly what she wanted to tell him. Today, she's going to tell us. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Joy Baluch.
Thank you, Don, and good afternoon, ladies, gentlemen, and others. I was rather apprehensive when my friend Sue asked me to come and speak to you. I have spoken to many reporters over the years. I have not always met them. And we haven't always agreed on about what I have said. So that you can realise my apprehension of coming here today. What Don didn't say is what you see is what you get. And I had hoped that there would have been... I wanted to show you some slides, so I'm just going to have to talk to them as I go through my speech. And remembering that the terminology I use is the terminology of the bush, so I make no excuses for it. There's another thing too. I was given 35 minutes to deliver this speech. It normally takes me that long just to say hello. But I have been known to take only 1 second to tell you where and when to go. So you're going to time me, Sue. My ancestors pioneered the vast northern region, which, of course, Port Augusta is the centre of the universe. They pioneered them as herdsmen, gold miners, cobbin coach drivers, butchers, dam sinkers and fettlers. I question what abysmal lives they had in England and Scotland to bring them to such a wild and unknown land with few resources other than a great faith in God and themselves to survive. As a fourth generation of that resilient stock, I would be disloyal to their memory and struggles if I did not continue the fight for what is now termed as the bush with the great passion that God replenishes me with daily. I praise the Lord also for being born into a loving family and for the strength I have inherited, also the love of my life, the father of my children, my lover, who himself was a displaced person and was a victim of man's inhumanity towards his fellow man, always encouraged, inspired and supported me in the fight to resolve the disparity between the city-state syndrome and regional rural Australia. With that brief history, how is it possible for me to be gracious to a succession of governments and myriads of faceless bureaucrats whom I believe plotted the situation in which we now find ourselves. In 1992, out of all of rural Australia, I was invited to deliver a paper at a conference in Canberra based on localism, regionalism and federalism. I have a copy edited by Christine Fletcher and Professor Walsh. During question time, I was asked to apologise for one of my comments. And I informed the Dean of the Faculty that at my 60th birthday, I promised never to apologise for telling the truth and that his request was denied. I can vouch for the fact... I can vouch for the fact that that was the day that Jim Hullock of the LGA had his first heart attack. I could see him leaning to the left, saying, "Don't give away the punchline, don't give away the punchline." And I really thought he was having a heart attack. You see, he was also a buddy of the dean, whom I said I wouldn't apologise to. In part, what I said also applies today in that, quote, "It seems to me that it is part of the central government plot that people will become so disillusioned that they will shift to the cities. However, their scheme is not working entirely well because there has been no comprehensive policy on urban management and development for 10 years. The focus has been on macroeconomics, with the result that there is a policy vacuum. In fact, I believe that history will judge that the planners from the 60s through to the 80s would be the pits of the professional scale, and economists are ruling and ruining our lives." I still stand by those comments that I made eight years ago. Talkfest after talkfest, and this is where I wanted to bring in an overhead, which shows the Prime Minister talking to the farmer. It was one of Aitchison's cartoon. And the Prime Minister says to the farmer, "Well, what are you growing out here?" And the farmer just looked at him and says, "More and more depressed." So talkfest after talkfest has been held at great cost to the nation without anyone making a decision for the betterment of the holistic community. I suspect that this is because it would have endangered their job prospects, as many of the participants. I know this to be correct from personal experience and that of others. It's extremely difficult to penetrate both the inner circle of the public service or politics unless one has assistance from within. In the 80s, I was on the shortlist for a job in Prices and Consumer Affairs and was unsuccessful. I was considered by the newly appointed regional manager from south of Jepps Cross, naturally, after considering my CV based on 24 years in private enterprise and 13 in local government to be too direct. In fact, he labelled me abrasive. I say abrasive, no. Direct and truthful, yes. I discovered some years later from the retiring public trustee I didn't get the job because the manager realised I was after his. I might add that God has the habit of not paying his debts in money, and that's why we should eat, drink and be merry, for tomorrow does not always come. The new regional manager's tomorrows were short-lived too, I might add. But I attribute that to prayer because I find it offensive when a man cannot keep his fly zipped up. After the Hanson affair, the outcome in the election in Queensland, the Prime Minister responded in the Weekend Australian 13th, 14th of June 98 by saying, quote, "I admit the difficulty of being in government is a globalised economy where there is a loss of sovereignty and weariness with change and where simplistic answers win the hearts of the oppressed. There is also a discontent with the prevailing political establishment. We are going through globalisation. There is a lot of economic change. There are a lot of people knocked around by it and who are threatened by it, I understand," unquote. It was then that I was going to put up another, but I'll read it to you. It would have been better if you'd seen it. It's about community types. The 10% that make those things happen, the 15% who watch things that happen, and the 75% who say, "When the stuffing hell did that happen?" The 10% of that equation, as well as the 15% of that equation, know from Dr. David Corton from Stanford and Harvard Business School that the world is now ruled by a global casino staffed by faceless bankers who have replaced the faceless bureaucrats and hedge fund speculators who operate with a herd mentality in the shadowy world of global finance. Each day, they move around more than $2 trillion around the world in search of quick profits and safe havens, sending exchange rates and stock markets into wild gyrations wholly unrelated to any underlying economic reality. With abandon, they make and break economies, buy and sell corporations, and hold the most powerful politicians hostage to their interests. When their bets pay off, they claim the winnings as their own. When they lose, they run to the government and public institutions to protect them against the loss, with pronouncements about how the poor should tighten their belts and become more financially prudent. They are now advancing this financial deregulation and negotiating international agreements such as the Multilateral Agreement on Investment, intended to make the world safe for financial speculators by preventing governments from intervening to regulate their activities. Many believe the bubble is about to burst, and consequently some alternative ideas are urgently required, because when the bubble does burst and go pop, rural and regional Australia will be seriously hurt. Now, regional Australia is not all bad news. You, in the media, tend to talk things down. Indeed, there is a range of success stories where communities are revitalising their towns, which I will touch on later. Despite the comments by those who choose to run our regions down, there is great prosperity in some areas and economic transformation taking place in our state today. But this prosperity is not uniform, with some regions having been able to grasp opportunities for great prosperity by capitalising on their potential and exploring opportunities for change. For example, in the Riverland, Barossa and parts of the southeast, they are facing problems in sourcing labour, housing and infrastructure provisions to match their business growth. Likewise is happening in Port Lincoln and the Eyre Peninsula. There are emerging businesses that are creating a new level of optimism, and the women on the West Coast are contributing to this. This situation does not, however, apply in other areas such as Upper Spencer Gulf and not the Iron Triangle, where the communities are struggling. However, survival and regeneration starts with the family and local communities. There was the feature of Australia in earlier times, the digger spirit, was born out of the adversity of war and depressions, when neighbour helped neighbour and mateship was a way of life. The materialism of post-war years has produced a selfishness that must be reversed. I have witnessed in my own city where, in 1981, 75% of the male workforce were employed in government departments, the two major subsidiaries, of course, being Australian National and ETSA. There was ample employment opportunities. The economy was flourishing. According to the 75% of that equation, life would still continue to be good. They did not heed the advice of either myself or the city manager that the bubble was about to burst. And when it did, true once again to their equation, it was poor little us. When the stuffing hell did that happen? Who made those decisions? This attitude, of course, would probably have been applicable, no doubt, across Australia. On the other hand, the community which sticks together, analyses, conserves and builds its resources, looks after its weak, elderly and disadvantaged groups, and together confronts looming problems, is almost invincible. Such relationships can be found in country areas, although even in this environment they are more the exception than the rule. In big metropolitan areas they are indeed very rare. If we want a self-help community, we have to invest time and effort in achieving this, and those communities that have been motivated into action should be encouraged and assisted by governments to develop programs which would be role model for others to follow. We need to develop stronger communities. This is the starting point for regional development. By building the social capital or glue that holds communities together, we can successfully make our own decisions. We can accept empowerment for determining our respective futures. So what is the government's role? It needs to be a supportive one and assisting, which will help to build the civic capacity within the communities. That is, leadership is emerging as an important determinant in economic transformation. We need to invest in new leaders, covering a range of areas, civic leaders, community or grassroots builders, and civic entrepreneurs. Communications in regional Australia is an integral part in community development. They need to be affordable. We talk of communities being ready to embrace the telecommunications superhighway when most of us are still kicking dust on the outback highway. It's imperative, therefore, that the government work with regional communities to ensure the provision of infrastructure and information technology without the usual excuse of commercial viability. How can we expect outback communities to be commercially viable compared to the profitable and populated metropolitan areas? People the breadth of the nation in the regions want to have their say, and equally as important, to be listened to by both governments and industry. They want to shape their own futures. Jeff Kennett, even up to the eve of that woeful election, was quoted as saying, "Melbourne is the heart of the state and the regions are the toe." Well, he woke up the next morning with the toe up part of his anatomy that I wouldn't want up mine. In South Australia, we still have the city-state syndrome. The CEO of the Chamber of Employment said only last week, it was a waste of public money putting infrastructure into the regions because there wasn't the population to support it. I didn't know that Roxby Downs was building on North Terrace in Adelaide. The state government, on the other hand, is attempting to throw off this shackle. Premier Olsen responded to strong lobbying by the Provincial Cities Association to establish the Regional Development Task Force to review aspects of regional development. The conclusion drawn by the task force were based on the philosophy that regional development is about regional communities improving their economic, social, cultural and environmental well-being by fully developing the potential of the region and its people. The major issues influence the task force recommendations were importance of regions, involving regions in decision making, responding to regions, integrating and coordinating regional development. The government's response to the task force was to develop an integrated regional development system with three main areas of focus: new governance arrangements, policies and strategies, and structures. The introduction of the new governance arrangements include the Minister for Regional Development, the Deputy Premier, Rob Kieran, setting up the Office of Regional Development, and I have two of my colleagues here today, darlings. Regional Development Council, the Regional Development Issues Group, and Coordinator in the Regions. The aim of these new arrangements is to provide more effective advocacy for regions and a whole of government and whole of state approach to addressing regional development issues. I liken the approach to playing Scrabble with the tiles face up. The aim in this case is to maximise the score rather than play by the rules where you try to minimise the opponent's score. And how often do we see communities and even government agencies playing Scrabble by the rules? The second initiative is to build on existing policies, such as the country plan, and develop a regional development framework to encourage partnerships and focus effort on agreed goals. By holding hands, we can make a difference. The third area is to develop a structure for planning processes. This includes the development of consistent planning, the facilitation of integrated regional planning across these regions, but most importantly, the recognition of existing development organisations as having the regional leadership role in regions. I suppose you could say that listening and local is the possible theme for the government's new approach. That is, encouraging local solutions to local problems. I believe that communities want to share responsibilities with government for development of their region. Communities do not want solutions imposed upon them. And the old one-size-fits-all government program approach has undermined initiative and personal responsibility. The starting point, therefore, for any economic transformation is the head, and communities need to develop a positive mindset which involves residents focusing attention on the positive rather than encouraging negative thought and action, beginning with talking a community up rather than down and emphasising involvement, participation and creative thinking and actions. I did have a quote here which I wanted to put up by, if I can find it, by John McKnight. And I can't find it. I've lost it. It says, all the historic evidence indicates that significant community development only takes place when the local community people are committed to investing themselves and their resources in the effort. That's why you can't develop communities from the top down or from the inside out. That is why I'm passionate about starting with our communities. Rural communities are starting to take hold of their future. And across Australia, there are communities creating enthusiasm, commitment and passion about saving their town. Let's look at the small township of Harrow, which is in the West Wimmera Shire, with a population of 90. Each week, they have a sound and light show, a step back in time, an experience of the life of 100 years ago. In a short period of time, they have raised over $200,000 for their community, for the various community groups, and this money has come from the visitors that are visiting Harrow. The hamlet of Woodford, Elvis Parsley, the hamlet of Woodford, just inland from Queensland's Sunshine Coast, used to be noted for its low security jail and not much more. Now it is well and truly on the tourist trail, and it's largely due to one man, Elvis Parsley, who sells fruit fit for a king. And rather than just another fruit and vegetable store, this character has created Elvis Parsley's Grape Land, where he dresses up as Elvis and parades on the street, Main Street, singing Viva Las Vegas. Geraldton, with a very positive campaign. Geraldton, a major regional centre, 400 k's north of Perth. This community was best known nationally for its drug problems, guns, murders, conflicts. Yeah, I know a few others like that. By calling a public meeting at a time when people and business people were hurting, resulted in a positive attitude campaign kick-starting Give Me Geraldton Any Day. Not only was the slogan dynamic, but the community chose a mascot called Jerry the Giraffe. Jerry was used to challenge people to stick their neck out for the community. Indeed, people who stick their neck out are rewarded and publicly recognised for their efforts. Jerry was a very powerful catalyst in turning around this mindset in the community. The community wanted to be idea and community obsessive, and as a result, they held a Wild Ideas Night every Thursday night, where people of any age could come and share their wacky ideas. One of the most successful, which has a message about getting back to the basics, was a similar concept to the running of the bulls. Instead, they chose the running of the sheep. There was an international press coverage of this, and over 6,000 people turned up to the event. It was so popular, in fact, that it was suggested that they rename the main street from Marine Terrace to Merino Terrace. What role can education play in regional development? The barometer I use to assess the health of the community are twofold: Main Street, youth-related activities and involvement. And I wanted to show you another slide of Australia, which depicts the loss in our communities of our youth who are all drifting to the cities. And this applies mostly in South Australia. The heart of any community is its youth. The involvement of our schools and economic revitalisation of our rural communities will be vital. A good example of this involvement in regional South Australia is in the outback, which is called the Torrens Trek Project. We all know that Australia is built on the sheep's back and boast that regional Australia is the powerhouse for the nation's economy, which exports, with exports in primary industry and minerals. Well, this isn't correct. Our greatest export is our youth. And the statistics prove that our sons and daughters are leaving the bush in droves for the cities. The future of our region is dependent upon our youth. They are the heart of the regions and our greatest asset. Retaining and attracting our youth to regional Australia is the greatest challenge we can face. And by holding hands together, we can develop a holistic approach to this issue. We lack the ability to attract the professionals, ranging from medical staff, education, police, engineers, planners, into the regions. Dr. David Squirrell of Flinders University has an innovative plan for attracting doctors to the regions, but his efforts are being hampered by Dr. Waldridge, our federal Minister for Health. The Provincial Cities Association, of which I'm chairman, has embraced the concerns expressed by Dr. Squirrell and is in the process of preparing a detailed submission to Dr. Waldridge. We know that we will have support from the South Australian Government through the Honourable Dean Brown, who has taken up the issues of rural regional health with his federal counterpart. We need to work together by holding hands between all levels of government, community and industry. Collaboration is the key to success, and we can achieve better outcomes from fewer resources. Money will not be the solution to all our problems, but it will assist. The Upper Spencer Gulf Common Purpose Group represents a collaboration between the three Upper Spencer Gulf cities, their development boards, unions, industry, Chamber of Commerce, and the University of South Australia. In addition, we have an implementation team comprising of members of the Department of Trade, the Business Centre, OS Industry, and Invest Australia. In 1998, a report by the Centre of Economic Studies concluded that the Upper Spencer Gulf region was performing badly compared not only to other regions in South Australia, but across the nation. The cities are experiencing high unemployment, declining employment in traditional industries, low household incomes, and declining population levels. Reasons for decline within the region can be explained in part by the high degree of industry specialisation evident and global competition that have led to employment losses. The local economy has not experienced the high level of service sector growth and primary industry investment as enjoyed by other South Australian regions. When the Common Purpose Group was formed some 15 months ago, we accepted the task of developing strategies that are capable of turning around the region by the year 2010. We realised we had to focus on the fundamental competitiveness of the region and pursue initiatives that enhance the attractiveness of the region for new investment. Outside the Common Purpose Group, each of the cities continues to act autonomously for its community. My city has just completed a broad community consultation as a result of pressure I applied to the government some 4 years ago. It will provide us with a blueprint for our future social well-being and also provide employment opportunities and economic benefits for the community, as well as enhancing our lifestyle. This blueprint can be applied to our sister cities with variation to accommodate their special differences. I was asked to deliver a message to the Prime Minister on behalf of rural regional Australia. I have provided you with some background to our problems and efforts to address the issues. As such, I point out, Mr. Prime Minister, that the Commonwealth Government held its Regional Australia Summit in Canberra last October. Your Deputy Prime Minister gave a strong commitment to deliver a draft plan to address the many issues raised by December, by Christmas time. It's now March and we haven't heard anything. During that time, you have made a few flying visits to the bush to listen. As a result, not only of the delay, but lack of consultation with the state and regional communities, We run the very great risk of missing opportunities to work together in developing solutions. You ask us to bring issues to the forum, but you run back to the bunkers in Canberra to develop solutions. That is not what we call collaboration. Regional development is not solved in one budget or short-term political gain. Regional development requires a medium to long-term commitment and one that honestly embraces collaboration and cooperation. I therefore ask the Prime Minister to recognise the existing structures within the regions. History has shown the penalty of trying to create new structures, particularly those imposed from the top down like the RIDOs. We ask the Commonwealth to work with the state to achieve a partnership in regional development. The South Australian Government, through the Regional Development Council, is producing a blueprint for encouraging a coordinated approach to agreed goals. Would it not be practical for the levels of government to put aside their differences and work together for the benefit of the regions? We talk about changes and pressures on regions. The regions of this nation have been dealing with it for hundreds of years. It is the government agencies that need to change. Government agencies, in most instances, work in their silos, duplicating and competing with each other, but they agree on one thing, that is one size fits all, and we know it doesn't. It is this program delivery attitude that has helped strip initiative from communities. We need government agencies to task a flexible approach. We need a whole of government and whole of state approach to regional issues. The culture within government agencies needs to be changed. It needs to be one of solving solutions rather than promoting programs. It needs the fat cats to be evicted from their bunkers and banished to the regions with their brood to live amongst us on our meagre wage and try our shoes on and learn the reason, the way that we walk. Regional Australia is confronting structural change and produces pain and gain. What we don't want are the doomsayers, but policies and partnerships designed to ease the transition and make a real difference for the benefits of all regions across this great nation. So, no glib generalisations about a rural crisis as a portrayal of economic gloom, which discourages investment at a time when communities are endeavouring to create an attractive climate. To speak of a general crisis is to ignore the vibrancy, energy and opportunities in our primary industry and its food processing partners and mineral wealth, and to disintegrate regional communities' attempts at attracting residents and industry. May I leave you with these few thoughts, which I was going to put up. The time to invest in building local self-help communities is before the crisis hits. And as Confucius said, when struck by thunderbolt, too late to consult book of dates. And the second is, the future is not a place to which we are going. It is a place we are creating. The paths to the future are not found but made, and the activity of making them changes both the maker and the destination. As I said to you previously, when I entered this prestigious sanctum, I offered a Protestant prayer, and I said, Lord, if I stop up, may they attribute it to my age, as grey hair does not necessarily bring wisdom. And the quiet message filtered down to me as I came through the door. Fear not, my faithful daughter, remember the academia and the regional manager. Thank you. It's a pity, Don, that I was not able to put up this Nicholson cartoon.
Describe it.
The Prime Minister says, okay, men, get rowing. We're off to the bush. And we see there, and I can now identify them, Reith, Costello, a few others, who says, the bush? Where the hell's that? Never heard of it. And one says, the little fat one in the front, says it's too far away. The Prime Minister, nevertheless, is too concerned about how he looks under his akubra, which is completely sitting on his shoulders. And somebody from the back says, looks great. So they row off and they get to the bush, and there they meet up with Mum and Dad and Dave. And Dad sees them coming and says, struth, we've got bloody company. Put on the kettle. And up comes this little man with the akubra still hiding his face and says, I've come to listen. And the farmer says, take a pew. 36 hours later, in the dark, under the moon, with the dingo howling in the background, and the farmer saying, and then there's the problem of, am I boring you? And the akubra answers back, no, not at all. But I'm terribly sorry that you've lost your school, your hospital, your banks, your nursing home, mobile phone, textile mill, and employment national office. Now I have to let you go. So he waves from the boat and says, cheerio. And Dad says to Mum, they're always in such a hurry, aren't they? And he yells back across the floodwaters, and if ever they try to close your Rotary or Apex or Lions Club, drop me a line. And across the water says, they've closed the bloody post office.
Well, I hope John Howard hears that. And now time for questions from the media. Please give your name and the organisation that you represent. Bob Main will take the microphone around.
All right. Christopher Gelly, formerly with you, during the LGA exec. Question about Telstra. Despite the catastrophic effects on jobs and country towns, would you still expect that the government will somehow, in the Senate, wheel a deal its way into getting rid completely of Telstra?
Well, I haven't got one of those bulbs that I can see into, and I can't say what they will do. But we all predict that the massive job cuts will be cut in regional Australia. And that flies in the face of the Prime Minister, who said there would be no more cutbacks, Commonwealth Government cutbacks to services. I would think that the Prime Minister is in for a very sticky time.
Hi, Joy. Catherine Hockley from The Advertiser.
Oh, hello, Catherine.
How are you going? Just wanted to ask, the Regional Development Council, you're a member of that council.
Yes.
You talked scathingly before about TalkFest. How is the Regional Development Council going to be anything other than a TalkFest?
Well, Catherine, I believe that the composition of the council will ensure that that's just not what will happen. We cannot afford the recommendations of the task force to sit on a bureaucrat's shelf and gather dust. And in any case, with the results of previous elections, I'm well aware that the Premier knows that this is probably his last chance. And when he came, when the Brown government came into power, John Olsen was the Minister for Economic Development. And he used as his platform the slogan, Before we get the states back on track, we have to get the regions. Now, the Premier went out on a limb to set up this task force and set up the Regional Development Office, and he will not allow this to gather dust, nor will he allow the council to be just a talk fest. We have only had one meeting. We're about to have our other at the end of this month, and I can assure you that there are three regional mayors, Mayor Cass, Mayor Hood, and the mouth from the north on that council.
Mrs. Bloke, Rex Jory from the Advertiser.
Oh, God.
No, it's actually Rex Jory.
Thank you for that.
No, well, when people say that to me, to Rex, when they say that to me, oh, God, I say no, just his mother.
Not the Virgin, I hope.
Well, there wouldn't be anything bad about that.
Mayor Blake, you've been harsh on government today.
No, I haven't.
Not on local government, but on state and federal government. Would you advocate altering our system so that we have more powerful regional governments, the abolition of the state government and the retention of the federal government?
That has crossed my mind, Mr. Jory, on more than one occasion. But there again, how are we going to draw up regions? It has been bandied around local government and in other areas, but when one develops a region, you have government departments whose regions overlap regions. And so we would have to really go back to the drawing board. But I believe that we are over-governed. And I'm one of those who firmly believe that the two-party system does not suit Australia. And I think that that was spelt out in the last federal election. And unless federal governments and state governments listen, and I mean truly listen, not a visit to the bush in an hour and think that that is listening, well, we're in diabolical trouble. You will see more independence cropping up, but regional councils, I think, are a long way in the future.
We can't do God again, Mayor, but we have got Ray Fewings.
We have, sorry?
Ray Fewings, 5DN, Ms. Bloke. Thanks for your time over the years. You could have been Pauline Hanson. I mean, Australia's been looking for a non-sounding politician who speaks from the heart. How would One Nation have gone if you'd been the leader and not Pauline Hanson?
Well, I was approached, and I said, you're too radical for me. Although, Mr. Fewings, I did give the Upper Spencer Gulf region two opportunities when I stood as an independent. And in my last, in my first attempt, that was when the Labor Party lost the seat of Stewart, and Graham Gunn became its member on my preferential votes. But there again, I might add that in the last days of the election, both major parties came out very strongly against me and said, a vote for the independent is a vote for the opposition. In any case, I would not consider that at this stage. But Australia has to be wary of that element out there. And I believe that the bush has spoken to governments, and they need to heed it.
Mayor, this is Cheryl Nixon, who's the Bureau Chief in Adelaide of Australian Associated Press.
Thank you. The Prime Minister has recently suggested opening the population debate, and Bob Carr immediately said that Sydney's full, don't send them here.
Sorry?
Bob Carr's immediately said that Sydney's full, don't send any immigrants here. Can you tell me whether you think that sending immigrants into the bush would actually help solve some of the problems in our regional centres?
We certainly would not want immigrants that were unskilled. Because of government policies over past years, which reduced the incentive for private enterprise to take on apprentices, and even they, and I'm talking about the Australian National and other departments and state departments, were reluctant to take on apprentices, but were encouraging private enterprise to, there is a great vacuum now for skilled tradesmen. So we would not want in Upper Spencer Gulf immigrants that were unskilled. As a matter of fact, in preparation for the Darwin-Alice Springs line, I have encouraged the partners in rail to develop a reskilling program for the workers who still remain in Upper Spencer Gulf but have no jobs, in order that they may get employment in that massive project. So we don't want any unskilled.
Alison Wish, I'm General Manager of the Port Pirie Central Mission. You spoke about David Squirrel, and I'm familiar with that training program because we cooperate when the country, when the medical students come, and we offer placement opportunities as part of that training. What I sit in a great paradox, our staff team's about 70, and we sit in, as you know, unemployment's very high in Port Pirie as it is in the other towns of the region. Cities of the region. What do you see is effective strategies for the fact that despite the preponderance of unemployment, places like my organisation has terrible trouble recruiting appropriately skilled professional staff for our positions? I've got about 10 jobs going at the moment and repeatedly have had to advertise several times over to try and fill them.
I think one of the strategies is that we have to sell the lifestyle that we enjoy in Upper Spencer Gulf and, in fact, in regional Australia. All of the local government bodies have, but we, particularly in Upper Spencer Gulf, have the problem because the media over the past has beat up this image about us. And so Dr. Squirrel's program of bringing doctors, young medical graduates, into the region to experience the lifestyle of the Upper Spencer Gulf is one that has to be encouraged. Police, it doesn't matter who they are, when they know that they are going to be transferred to the Upper Spencer Gulf region, refuse to go because of the image that has been created. And so in the police force, both in Port Augusta, Whyalla and Murray Bridge, they are developing in-house training programs where Port Augusta has got 9 probationary officers, as has Whyalla and Murray Bridge. But they're also encouraging mature-aged people to apply for these positions who already live in those cities, who can undergo training and come back into the regions. I really don't know what your answer is other than just highlighting there are many people who have never been north of Jepps Cross. And they don't know the excellent lifestyle that exists in all of the Riverland, in all of the regions. They get this image and they focus upon it. But another strategy, I think, would be for the local communities to sponsor young people to educate them right all the way through so that they will come back into the community. We have had to just recently do that. went away from Port Augusta, educated in Adelaide, and now they're coming back to the professions. It's going to take time, but this is another strategy that I believe that we have to work on. I have also encouraged the other mayors of the Provincial Cities Association to develop CD-ROMs so that they can, or videos, whatever you like, something that we can put on the internet so that people can draw it up and see how good life is, how good it can be, and endeavour to attract those professional people. I understand and I sympathise with you. No furphy, darling.
I'll try not to, Joy. Angus Redford, Member of Parliament. My question is, do you think it's appropriate for the Federal Parliament to interfere with the regional policies of mandatory sentencing?
No, I bloody will
do not. That apply in Western Australia and Northern Territory?
No.
And if not, why not? And do you think they also ought to interfere with some of our mandatory sentences, such as for car stealing and various other provisions that apply also in New South Wales and in Victoria?
No, I just don't agree with it. And that's a clear message. Why? Why should they interfere in what is the state matter? It's as simple as that. And as a matter of fact, a fortnight ago, when the provincial cities, mayors, met with the Premier, that was an issue that was pursued. But the Premier was quite silent on that issue. It wasn't a hard one.
Mayor, my name is Robert Main from the Bulletin magazine. I'm over here on your left. But for the day, I'm actually little Johnny Howard. And when you woke up this morning, it was my head that was on your arm. And the first question I said to you when you woke up this morning was, will I get re-elected next time around?
And I would say, son, if you don't lift your act, you're going to end up like the regional manager.
Mayor Blake, Chris Russell, editor of LGA News, a well-known publication to you.
I have heard of it.
A very simple question. You talked a little bit about access to telecommunications, education, training in the bush. I read this morning in Rex's publication more about potential cuts to library funding. Are you prepared to comment?
Well, you know that this is an issue which the LGA are taking up. And once again, the cuts, of course, would affect those of us in the country to prop up the metropolitan area. The City of Adelaide. And you know I don't agree with it, darling.
Time for one more question.
Jeff Upton on your left from Austrade. Last year I had the pleasure of attending a Regional Australia Forum at Port at Whyalla, which was the Commonwealth Government going to listen to what Regional Australia had to say, particularly up the Spencer Gulf. Are you happy with some of the outcomes that are coming out of that? Is it shown that debate to be a useful occasion?
No, I thought it was too bureaucratic. But I haven't seen all of those recommendations. But it wasn't what many of us thought it would be. And I would think that is what is going on all around Australia. There's too much talking down. And the ideas have to come from the grassroots up. It's this one size fits all again, which just isn't on.
Mr. President, are you prepared to take one more question from down the back here?
Okay, yes, yeah, surely. Ray Wood from Professional Public Relations. Is there any Ray Wood. Is there any politician, state or federal, whom you would offer a job in Whyalla City Council?
In where?
Sorry, Port Augusta, or Wyala, or any of those little suburbs of Port Augusta.
Is there any politician that I would give a job to?
Yes.
What sort of a job? And you won't get one either, Angus.
Mr. President,
as a matter of fact, we have two ex-politicians in Upper Spencer Gulf, and both were the CEOs of the regional development boards. And I thought at one stage that it must have been mandatory for you to be a member of the Labor Party to get the job.
I believe we've got one more, is that right?
Joy, I'd just like to ask you this. When we were talking on the telephone about you coming here today, you said to me, is the advertiser going to be there because I've got a bone to pick with them, except you didn't quite say it like that. They're here. What would you like to say to them?
Well, recently when I was down here in hospital, there was letter written by John Dyer, the mayor of Charles Sturt, back to the then Minister for Local Government about the manner in which Minister Brindle, we thought, had offended some councillors. And I wrote a response back. Now, I did run it past a lawyer and it never got printed. And then, on the same day, I wrote another in response to the Prime Minister's visit. You see, he was lucky I was in hospital, because it could have been the bloody reverse if I wasn't, if I'd been in Port Augusta. And that never got printed either. So I just wonder, in looking down the columns of the Advertiser, whether whether the letters are... they all seem to be written by just a few people, and whether in actual fact the press are interested in views from the bush, because they all seem to be centrally located.
Well, on that
and I was nice to you, darling. I might have used a few four-letter words like stuff up. I use one F in stuff.
Well, thank you very much indeed. We thank our guest in the usual way, and I think that John Howard might get a message. And please, a magnum of St. Hugo Quinawarra Cabernet Sauvignon 1962, and I think it's going to a very lovely fate. Thank you. Well, I'll take it.
I feel a bit reluctant to accept this, you see, because I tend to get aggressive on alcohol. And I am in a mayoral election, and so I'm trying to lift my public image. And in actual fact, I only drink red at communion, but I might indulge now.